Coming up on Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Sometimes what you need to make a real impact and really challenge the poverty premium is something so simple.
So people can access the money they've actually earned rather than waiting to pay them.
The poverty premium is this idea that lower income households end up having to pay a lot more for essential goods and services.
I think it's a no-brainer, yes.
What's your favourite boy band?
Boyzone. So they're in what I call the cash trap.
Welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People.
Hello and welcome to Money Bites by Smart Money People. Coming up on today's show, we're asking, can we end the poverty premium?
We've got James Herbert from Hasty and Cole Packman from Fair by Design coming up. But first, what is the poverty premium, Mike?
Well, Nate, the poverty premium is this idea that lower income households end up having to pay a lot more for essential goods and services, like the energy they consume or the financial products they use. So in the UK, the poverty premium costs the average low-income household £490 a year, and it comes about in a number of ways. So it could be things like only being able to access high-cost credit or high energy tariffs.
Well, there we go. That's a start. But stay tuned for a full and in-depth exploration of the poverty premium in today's episode. And to start us off, we have a big cheese in James Herbert of Hasty. Hasty are a service that offers employers and employees the chance to withdraw earned wage before payday.
Time to fire up the hot seat as Mike welcomes another guest in to grill the big cheese.
We're joined today by James Herbert, the CEO of Hasty, who are all about helping you to get your earnings paid on demand. Hi, James. Thank you for joining us. You're the big cheese at Hasty. So can you tell us, what is it that you guys do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for having me. At Hasty, we are revolutionizing the way people get paid. We are giving employees access to their earned pay on demand to drive financial freedom, improve financial well-being and productivity, both of the employees and of their company.
And where did the idea come from? This is a relatively new concept, certainly here in the UK. How did you come about launching Hasty?
Absolutely. So there's a handful of people trying to address this globally. We are the leading company in the UK with on-demand pay. But the idea really came from my first business. So at university, I founded a staffing business called Bright Sparks. And that employs thousands of mainly students and recent graduates to work with in events and hospitality. And it was a problem I saw at the coalface there. Take the example of Royal Ascot. It's the beginning of the summer holidays. Lots of staff are working there. It's time to earn some money, ready for the summer ahead and obviously the year ahead at university. But it's also straight after the exams. People have been partying. They've spent their entire student loan for the year. So money is tight. You'd be working, training Monday, working Tuesday to Saturday for the event. Problem is, by Friday, you might have 25% of the employees phoning up saying, I want to work, but I can't afford the train fare. So they're in what I call the cash trap, that if they had £20, they could go out and earn £200. That's obviously a negative for the worker because they would benefit from earning that money and they want to do it. It's also a negative for the employer because they've got to find replacements and you lose the consistency of staff and everything else. And the irony there, of course, is that they've worked Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday already, but they can't access that pay until payday, which is a week later. And even that's too long. If you can give them that pay immediately, you solve that problem. Now, that's not a problem that's easy to solve at a small scale. So how do you look at that? You know, that company's already not getting paid by Ascot till 90 days, end of month, normal problems with working with large organizations. And that company utilizes factoring and supply chain finance. And there are a range of different products out there for businesses to effectively manage cash flow. What effectively we've done is we've re-engineered reverse factoring to apply it to people. So people can access the money they've actually earned rather than waiting to payday. You know, we live in a world where we control nearly every second of our lives using our smartphone. Yet we still have to wait for a month for the money we've earned. Yet, you know, you've earned the money on day one of the month. By day 30 of the month, people are in high-cost credit, overdrafts, and a range of different products. It's very costly, getting hammered by debt, waiting to receive the money they've already earned. We fix that.
I was chatting to a few people about the idea, and the younger and the more kind of digital they are, more kind of engaged or within the gig economy, as many of us are increasingly operating within, the more they're fans of this kind of idea. And the older and more established they are, the more they talk about objections. And the key one seems to be, actually, does this make it harder to budget? Because rather than having all your money at the end of a month and paying your rent and your big bills, you kind of got to manage your money better. So what are your thoughts around that? Is there a risk that earnings on demand actually make it harder to budget?
You're right that that we have those objections. No, it doesn't make it harder to budget. What we're finding is a very, very powerful link between effort and reward. Not only are people able to access a percentage of their own pay, up to 50% of their own pay on demand, but it's actually driving much better budgeting behavior. And we roll on top of that a big financial education program as well. We work with the Money Charity and the Money Advice Service, and a lot of the advice around budgeting is allowing yourself a budget based on a certain amount of money to spend those things as you go. The great thing about Hasty is it directly links that budget to your work effort and earnings in real time. Our average user is withdrawing funds from the app about once a week, but actually our app daily retention is higher than Snapchat because people are in the app seeing how much they've earned and managing their finances around it. So we're seeing really positive budgeting behaviors as a result of people using Hasty. Our own studies actually showed that if you are paid monthly, you are twice as likely to use high cost credit as if you paid weekly. And if you think about the demographics of those paid weekly versus monthly, it tends to be the lower paid variable staff workers that are paid weekly, which shows you how big this problem is and how actually increasing the frequency of pay can have a massive, massive positive impact on financial fitness, financial well-being, and people managing their funds.
So look, dinosaurs aside, getting access to a proportion of your earned salary before payday is clearly going to be appealing to many workers, and particularly those in the kind of gig economy or with more kind of ad hoc income streams or less dependable sources of income. Does Hasty also benefit employers?
Absolutely. So we sit in this middle of this very effective positive multiplier effect. By offering Hasty, employers are able to improve the financial well-being of their workforce. They can drive the engagement of their workforce through improved retention, attraction, engagement. That obviously has the benefit of helping make that company more productive and hopefully more profitable, meaning they can employ more people and or pay those more productive workers more, and so on and so forth. So we're actually at the center of this positive multiplier where we drive the productivity of people, of their companies, and at scale, we believe we can have a massive positive impact on the economy as a whole.
Isn't it a no-brainer for them? What is the resistance that you come across?
I think it's a no-brainer, yes. But the resistance is very similar to the ones you mentioned a few minutes ago, with those objections that people are worried that by giving people their cash flow early, that it is going to get them into trouble. Whereas actually, you've got 19 million people using their overdrafts every year. The workforce is only 34 million people. Two-thirds of the workforce are in their overdrafts. You've got 82% of the workforce using some form of high-cost credit on a monthly basis, be it credit cards, overdrafts, or worse still, payday loans. The problem is out there. You've got to look at it in the whole, and by providing that cash flow early, it's helping solve the liquidity problem. Money has two values. There is the absolute numerical value of that money, but also there is the time value of that money, that £100 today is worth more than £100 tomorrow, particularly if you've got your travel card to pay for, or an unexpected bill, or a fine that's going to go up, or a debt that's going to compound. You know, that money is really, really valuable. And on the flip side of that, it's not only for those unexpected expenses. We had a fantastic bit of feedback from a user this time last year, actually, who signed up to Hasty within a couple of days, withdrew the funds for January to benefit from buying her flights to Australia on the BA sale, saving like 40% on a very expensive flight. So you can use it and a sort of very proactive luxury user, if you like, in that case, through to the regular users. One of our own graduates is using Hasty very regularly. We cover the cost, obviously. We're big believers in what we're doing. And then you've got your ad hoc users, be it for travel, your groceries, other expenses and unexpected bills, which are the categories that are the highest feedback that we get from our user base.
Certainly a lot of shocking money stats out there, right? So the amount of people with less than £100 of savings, or the inability of some people to actually even afford to get a bus fare to work when actually they've earned a certain amount of money within a week or within a kind of set month. Hasty Pay allows employees to withdraw up to 50% of their earned salary. How did you come up with that number? What's behind it? Why isn't more?
It's not more for a couple of reasons. There is obviously tax and other expenses and adjustments that happen at the month end or end of the payroll. And also from a user experience point of view, people are usually pretty good at just cutting a number in half and understanding where they are. So it's again to encourage responsible use, to encourage transparency, people really understanding how it works. Now, with regards to the 50%, if you are a lower paid employee, you will find that your net pay, your take-home pay at the end of the month, is closer to your gross pay. By giving 50% of growth come the end of the month, you have a larger portion reserved for payday, which again helps for that budgeting. For the higher paid earners, the net pay is further from, it's closer to the 50%, is further from your gross, but the absolute amounts are bigger. So again, you still have a larger amount of money available. So it just kind of works. And again, from a UX point of view, people understand cutting in half. Beyond that, obviously, we are looking at this as it's not just a UK problem, you know, it's worldwide. And the advantage of having a level like that is, you know, for example, you look at, you know, Scandinavia, where the taxes tend to be higher. So we can just adjust that amount to a lower level. And indeed, in the UK as well, we allow companies to reduce that amount. And that could be for a particular category of employee. It could be a particular, you know, down to one employee who might be struggling or having difficulties, or across the entire company. We have a hospitality company, for example, that has a number of their venue managers live in the pubs, and chefs and what have you. And they are paid just 30%, whereas the people that live out get 50% because those employees that are living in pay their rent out of their wages. So again, you can adjust it like that. And beyond that, as I mentioned, our own graduate, people can adjust it as well. So even if the company is offering 50%, you may actually decide, hey, I'm going to live within 25% of my means, therefore saving, you know, an extra 25% of my pay come the end of the month, and adjust it within the app to do that. But we still let you toggle back should you have that unexpected bill to, you know, we've got your back in that situation.
You talked about, on average, across all the kind of users, all the employees using Hasty, that people are kind of making one drawdown a week on average, although they're kind of logging into the app a lot more frequently. Is that surprising, or is that what you expected when you set out on this journey a few years ago?
It's not a million miles away from what I expected. I mean, I guess I came from it from the workforce that we are seeing that uptake within. We're looking at the hospitality, the gig workforces, students working, etc. People that are more digitally native, so they're comfortable with the technology, etc., etc. So, to an extent, we did anticipate quite a lot of this. Otherwise, we probably wouldn't have launched the business if we thought we weren't going to get any uptake at all. But it has been very satisfying to see that is working, and the feedback we're getting. You know, we have fantastic reviews within the app stores. We've got, you know, we're publicly available reviews on our website, and the feedback is fantastic. So people are really valuing that usage. It makes sense as well if you think about us as a species, and this is where a lot of the productivity gains come from. We're still hunter-gatherers. And we will be for millennia to come. That's not going to change. And the idea of hunting and gathering on day one of the month, but not eating until day 30, is alien to us because we'd have starved to death. So why do we pay people this way? Mm. Yeah, if you can hunt and gather on day one and eat on day one, if you can work on day one and have the opportunity to use those fruits of that labor on day one, it drives productivity at a very, very genetic level almost within the workforce. Mm.
It is, though, still, as we said at the start, very much a new concept, certainly for millions of consumers, right? They haven't even heard of this concept, let alone have access to it. What are your predictions for the next 2 years? What percentage of us, you talked about overdraft usage being, I guess, the common fallback for people in work. What do you think, how many people in the UK do you think will be using services like Hasty in the next 2 years?
A lot of that is obviously going to be controlled by their employers. So how much of a groundswell can we create by the workforce requesting it and the enlightened employers coming around? We do think there's going to be a tipping point where, rather than being a leader and it's a nice to have and you start to offer it, it becomes a need to have. And if you're not offering it, you are going to lose employees to your rivals. We're already seeing a few situations within certain industries, within hospitality in particular, where we have a number of different companies where people are only going to go to companies that have it. So I think we are going to see increased growth rate as the awareness of this and people become more comfortable with it, it grows. And I also predict that over time we're going to see employers contributing more towards it because we'll have more data behind it to prove those efficiency gains, prove the productivity gains and the return on that investment. So by offering and covering the cost or a portion of the cost, I think over, you know, the next 2 to 3 years, we'll see more and more employers covering the cost or at least a portion of that for their workforce.
And I guess this will be highly dependent on a per employee basis, but what are the typical costs for an employer? How costly is this to get up and running?
I mean, we have very transparent pricing. We give everyone, every user, receives their first withdrawal every month free of charge up to £100. So totally free of charge, no cost to either the employee or the company. Beyond that, we charge a 2.5% transaction fee. There's no interest, it's not debt, it's an increased frequency of pay. So it's very fairly priced, very reasonable. That cost can either be covered for or contributed to by the employer, or as is in the case with 99% of our clients, they pass the cost on. So the user themselves pays for that. So therefore, in 99% of our clients, it costs the company absolutely nothing to offer. And the people that value it are prepared to pay the fee.
So look, James, I think I know what you're going to say, but if listeners want to find out more about Hasty, what should they do?
First point of call, go to our website, www.hasty.com, to find out a little bit more. And start telling your employer about it. We'd love to get you all on board. We believe we can have a really positive impact on financial well-being of the workforce and therefore the productivity of the workforce. And we want to have as many as people as possible using Hasty and benefiting from it.
Well, look, James, thank you for coming in and telling us a bit more about Hasty and what you're up to. I think it's a concept that is incredibly interesting for millions of consumers. So thank you for coming in to talk a bit more about it today.
Thank you for having me.
And now, get your chopsticks ready. It's Skittle Mania!
We've put a bag of Skittles into Cup A and given our guests a pair of chopsticks. Over 90 seconds, James will attempt to transfer as many Skittles from Cup A into Cup B, whilst answering some of the silliest questions the Smart Money People team can muster. Let's see if James can seize the Skittles and top the Money Bites leaderboard. James, your time starts now. What's your favourite coloured Skittle?
Blue.
There's already two Skittles in. This is an incredible, incredible start. Do you have a favourite James from history?
James Bond.
What's your favourite spread to put on a slice of toast?
Honey.
What's your favourite boy band?
Boyzone.
There's a lot of Skittles pinging and we are 25 seconds in. How many times in your life do you think you've sneezed?
33 million.
How many Skittles do you think could fit into Wembley Stadium?
33 million.
33 million. With 35 seconds in, there's a phenomenal amount of Skittles moving from the cups. This is crazy. Name four American states.
Washington, New York, California, and Alaska.
If you had the option, would you rather be a bird or a fish?
Bird.
Do you ask for a knife and fork when given chopsticks at a Chinese restaurant? Wait, let me answer that. Clearly not. Clearly not. What would you make as your main dish on your night of come dine with me?
Fish.
Just fish?
15 seconds left, James. I will have a steak tartare.
Steak tartare. What would you rather win? An Oscar, Nobel Prize, or the World Cup?
No, I want to say the Nobel Prize, but probably the World Cup.
World Cup. And your time, stop. All right. Now, I think we've had a pretty phenomenal effort. Eddie, can you do the count for us, please?
Well, it's tough because you finished the cup once, then we had to refill.
So how many was in the cup?
It was 25, so that is, and there's four left, so that is 46.
46 Skittles from James from Hasty. Look, James, thank you for coming in. I can't even eat them. Thank you for smashing the Skittle challenge. No one wants to do it anymore. And we look forward to following the progress of Hasty.
Bring on the Skittle World Cup.
Next up, we spoke to Cole Packman of Fair by Design. Fair by Design is a movement dedicated to ending the poverty premium. They work with government, regulators, and new fintechs to help further the process of eliminating the poverty premium.
Today, we're joined by Carl Packman from Fair by Design, the movement dedicated to reshaping essential services so they don't cost more for low-income consumers. Carl, thank you for joining us today. Can you start by telling us a bit more about who you are and what do you do?
Yeah, Fair by Design is an organisation that's a campaign and an investment fund that really started in the heads of a few people a couple of years ago. Big funders, funding organisations like Joseph Rowntree Foundation, Big Society Capital, they realised they wanted to pull a lot of their resources into looking at the poverty premium into one easy to manage place. And Fair by Design was the result of that. Since then, it's been populated with people who work on the campaign side. And for us, it's about trying to influence regulators and importantly, policymakers and firms themselves on what the poverty premium is and how we can design the poverty premium out collaboratively. For the investment fund side of it, it's about trying to find those new insurtech, fintech, energy tech, new whizzy kids on the block out there who are going to disrupt the market in essential services to ultimately get rid of this poverty premium for low-income households.
Mm. And we're definitely hearing a lot more people talking about the poverty premium these days. Can you tell us a bit more about why poorer households have to pay the most for certain things? And you talked about energy and financial services as two examples. Can you tell us why that is?
When we pay for goods and services, there are factors of the cost of those goods that reflect how they are sold to us, importantly how they're sold to us. And there are also factors of that cost, of the cost that firms choose to give to customers and not other groups of customers. For instance, a firm may wish to reward loyalty for a particular service. Well, that money has to come from somewhere, and it likely comes from other customers. And similarly, firms may wish to penalise loyalty. And of course, that penalty might be going towards attracting new customers. But poorer customers are much more likely to be those customers who are penalised by some of those higher cost factors. And that's because they're much more likely to be either digitally excluded or show signs of digitally low confidence and miss out on the best deals, because a lot of firms, they're just putting their best deals online now. So if you're not a super digitally savvy consumer spending hours and hours looking for the best deal online, you're likely to miss them out. Similarly, if you use a prepayment meter, much more likely to be on a low income or live in a low income area. Also, much more likely to not know that you can either change that meter and have a conversation with your landlord about changing that meter. But also, that meter might actually be the budgeting tool that you require for being on a low income. And similarly, in credit markets, you might have a low or invisible credit file. So you might have to go to a provider like a payday lender or a rent-to-own provider where the costs are for essential goods that, you know, we all know and love and need, much, much higher.
That makes a lot of sense. And you talked about kind of information and how people get information that helps them make the best kind of deals. How much of a factor do you think access to information is when it comes to how consumers can ultimately fight the poverty premium?
I think information is a big thing, actually. I don't need to tell anyone that the lot of the world has moved to digital by default services today. And that's because that's where a lot of money is and where a lot of consumers are. But of course, with anything like that, you do miss a chunk of consumers will be excluded by virtue of this move over to a digital by default principle.
And certainly when it comes to financial services, and you talk about kind of alternatives to like payday lenders and rent-to-own type firms, there's a good kind of movement of firms bubbling up, and obviously a long-standing kind of history of credit unions in the UK, but they're all still fundamentally quite small and they struggle to get their message out, certainly when it comes to the multi-million or tens of million kind of marketing budgets of some of the bigger firms. How does that ever get overcome?
I think that's just about how you pitch the challenge, because if your challenge is to try and get those smaller firms, in those smaller niche firms like credit unions, to outcompete the big players, the mainstream, the incumbent services, on the high street, banks, for example, then that's ultimately a tough challenge. I think credit union membership in this country is around about 3%, and it has been for the last 10 years. For us, the challenge is working collaboratively with multiple providers, big and small, to be able to identify where the poverty premium exists, on the assumption that people aren't necessarily ripping customers off out of malice. It might just be an archaic systems problem. It could be that historically, if you are a credit invisible, for example, you are given a higher risk factor and higher risk cost as a consequence, and that might not actually reflect the risk profile of that other consumer. And if people aren't able to be accommodated within the mainstream or by those incumbent services, then that's where you build up the resource capacity of those smaller firms. Credit unions is one example, of course, but I'm also thinking of those smaller credit firms that we have on our... We've funded a few. Fair by Design Investment Fund has funded some. And also InsurTech. This is a very exciting area for us at the moment, of the small niche insurance firms who are... have got a much more agile product that can be better suited for people on a low income and their needs, their specific needs.
And of all the kind of various initiatives that are underway, some of them obviously led by yourselves and your portfolio companies, some by other kind of private sector, public sector, for-profit, non-for-profit firms, etc. What are you most excited about as kind of having the biggest, I guess, material impact on reducing the poverty premium over the next few years? What gets you excited that actually there is hope for that kind of 10-year challenge that you talked about?
Well, I sometimes have to stop myself from getting too excited by the snazzy, innovative new invention, the new thing in town, because, you know, sometimes what you need to make a real impact and really challenge the poverty premium is something so simple, you know, and sometimes it's very difficult to get super, super excited by something where you think, well, that's just common sense. That should just be around for everyone. So, I mean, the thing that I'm most excited by, which is the most simple to me, is an automatic switch-in provider and service for people across the range of their essential services that tells them, that prompts them to where the best deal, and automatically switches up to that best deal when they've given their when that individual has given their consent for that firm to do that. Where that's most vital is in energy, because nearly half of the average poverty premium across all low-income households, which is £490, £233 of that comes from not being on the best energy deal. So just having some equipment or a service that automatically switches you over to the best energy deal almost eradicates overnight that £233 premium that low-income consumers are left with, because they don't have the confidence, you know, necessarily the digital confidence to compare and switch services. Also the time it takes to switch those services. It's not easy for people. Some people don't think that there is an option of them being able to get a better deal because they've been with the same energy provider for a long time, because their landlord has obliged them to. It's not that there's no thinking behind this. It's just some people exist in a reality where they've been constantly told day in, day in, day out that you won't get better than this. And that's what we're up against. So the energy switching provider, that's the most exciting for me.
Carl, well, look, we're delighted to have you on the Money Bites podcast, and specifically to talk about the poverty premium, because it's an issue that actually matters to the lives of millions of consumers. So thank you for coming on and talking to us a bit more about the work that Fair by Design are doing, and a bit more about the poverty premium too.
Thank you.
And that's all we have time for on this week's Money Bites. Thank you to James Herbert of Hasty and to Carl Packman of Fair by Design. Please do remember to review, subscribe, and why not visit us at Smart Money People. Goodbye.